Welcome to our new show, the What Anyone Can Do podcast with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our new show picks up where the last show, Year of the Peer, left off, highlighting the simple truth that who you surround yourself with matters, and that if we enlist the support of others, give back to those who give to us, and pay it forward for the next generation, we can do anything. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari and I will interview a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you succeed in business and in life. How? By doing the things anyone can do, but most of us never will. Welcome back to another episode of What Anyone Can Do. He is Leo Battari. I'm Randy Cantrell. We're glad that you're here to eavesdrop on our conversation. And today, Leo and I thought that we would give some breath to emerging leaders. This continually comes up in Leo's workshops and his work, mine as well. So dive in.
Yeah, no, it really does. And it was whether I was, whether it was the trip in the UK or the workshops I've done here in the US, a lot of them were done with CEOs and managing directors, but a lot of groups include what we often refer to as our key executives. It could be director level, it could be VP level, whatever. But what's really interesting about it is, I do want to bring this up also, is that, you know, I heard recently, just when you think about how important this emerging leaders area is, actually Vistage has a program now that's an emerging leaders program. And it's more curriculum based, basically. This guy, Tom Cuthbert, who's a chair there, does a lot to run that. And it really teaches core competencies and does it in a way that doesn't just move from one topic to another, but really tries to instill mastery. But the point of it is we know how tough it is to find good people. And that's great, but we also have to develop those people, you know, and we also have to put them in a position where they can be successful and they can be the next generation of leadership in the company. Tom has this great expression. He said, you know, for all of the time he's been doing this and counseling CEOs, he's learned basically that most companies break in the middle, which I think is kind of an interesting, concept. But, and also, not to mention that it's important to prepare people to be leaders in the future, but you also want to keep your good people. And you keep your good people by making sure that they understand that they have opportunities going forward. But it makes me think of, we had Jim Kouzis on the show, and we were looking at, you know, his book, and it was all about, you know, learning leaders and learning leadership. And he's always asked that, are leaders, you know, born, or are they, you know, kind of made? And of course he says he's never met a leader who wasn't born,
right?
which is very clever. I said, however, and I've mentioned to you, because I told that story about, you know, actually both my daughters, Kristen and Taylor, I think in many respects are born leaders in many respects. They have a gift for it. They have a penchant for that. However, that doesn't mean that both of them haven't had a whole lot to learn about what that looks like,
sure,
you know, in the workplace, right? That it isn't just about being the person in charge and telling other people what to do, kind of, which is what we grew up with in that tyrant school of leadership management kind of thing back in the day. But it's the idea of how do I serve others, you know, in a way that creates context for me to be successful. So I think this whole area and how we get support and how we surround ourselves with people who can help us be better leaders is just super important, I think.
And we'll put links to that, because Jim was a guest on Year of the Peer podcast. And so we'll put links to that for those of you that are listening. We'll put links to that if you want to go back and reference that. It was really good, really insightful. Well, he's Jim Kouzis.
How could it be? You know, it is.
Right. Exactly. with emerging leaders, I hear this I'm sure that you do too, put some language and some thought to the whole leadership gap notion. CEO after CEO, when they get down to where they really live honestly, and as they look at their talent pool and they see great potential, by and large, I know many CEOs who really have high expectations for these younger emerging leaders who may be first time supervisory positions or whatnot, but repeatedly I hear the phrase, but we've got this leadership gap.
Yeah.
Can you put any language at all to that? Because I'm finding that CEOs are having a real difficult time articulating. They know what that means, but helping me understand what that means in the context of their organization, they're finding it very difficult.
I think the gaps can be for different reasons. You know, sometimes CEOs think that they are trying to create a kind of context where leaders are being developed, and in fact, they're not at all, and they don't even realize it. And I think I mentioned to you a number of years ago, there was an HR person who was talking to me about their company, and they were kind of bragging about the fact that, wow, look at our leadership is so trusted, you know, by the employees. And I asked that person, I said, well, next year when you do the survey, also ask the question in reverse. See how much your employees believe your leaders trust them. Of course, when he did the survey, and he actually, to his credit, did ask the question the following year. And that number was a far cry from, you know, how employees basically trusted leadership. They didn't feel they were trusted at all. There were people that said, hey, I've got an approved budget. You know, we've got a plan. We've got all this stuff. And yet when I want to spend a dime, I need 14 signatures in order to do it. That didn't feel like trust to them, you know. And I think that they weren't in positions where they felt they could make mistakes. They weren't in positions where they felt they could really take risk. And because of that, over time, you're not going to be inclined to do that. You're not going to be inclined necessarily to be that leader that is going to be prepared to go to the next level. You know, and in other cases, I just think it's, you know, Marshall Goldsmith's book, of course, you know, what got you here isn't necessarily going to get you there kind of thing, right. I think is very appropriate in that there are certain things people need to learn to get to a certain place in an organization, but then there's a whole new set of skills that they need. There's a whole new mindset, actually, probably better put, that they need to adopt if they're going to really play a leadership role in the organization versus someone who's just going to manage tasks. And you and I talked about this before we got on today. I mean, how much, other than the last, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years, I guess, but leadership has become this big word, right? Mm-hmm. But prior to that, it was really all about management. It's why you have an MBA. It's why you have, you know, this whole idea of being a manager and management. And it was about the task, and it was about, you know,
well, it was Peter Drucker. I mean, it was Peter Drucker was the icon that we all looked up to and read, and
yeah,
it was all management.
Yeah. And by the way, the management's super duper important, but leadership's really important too. and a real focus and a laser focus on leadership beyond management is essential. And I think when you look at that discipline, it's still relatively young. You know, we talked about the fact that when all we knew when we grew up in what seemingly the leaders that we all reported to, kind of, they all graduated from whatever tyrant school of management there was back in the day.
Right.
Or the tyrant school of leadership.
That's right. Bob Sutton has a word, control, has a word for it.
Yeah. You know, of course you're going to do it. You're lucky you have a job. You're getting paid. You know, right. I mean, it was a real, it was a very different mindset versus today.
It was also a zero-sum game back then, you know.
Totally. It was all about winners and losers. It was all, no question about it.
Yeah.
Now, all you knew, or I felt all I knew is like, there's got to be a better way to do this than this. This just seems wrong in so many ways that you know, why do employees have to feel that they just get beat up Monday to Friday and then the weekend was just really recovering from the wounds that you had all week long, right. So you could go back into battle again. You know, it was a really different time. than today when we talk about, you know, how do we create, you know, how do we do what, you know, Robert H. Thompson talked about in his book, right? When he was talking about the offsite, and he's got Sam Arthur, who's the leadership metaphor in that book. And he wasn't the general manager or the concierge or, you know, the head guy. He was basically the gardener. And so he's out watering the plants and doing his thing and talking to, you know, but he wasn't screaming at the plants to tell them to grow faster. You know, he was kind of he was kind of doing all of the things that made sure they had food and sunlight and water. And if they needed to be moved from one area of the garden to the other so they could flourish more, then that's what he would do. And it's much more of that leadership, you know, and figuring out how we as leaders can serve others, not just boss others. And I think that's the big transition when you've got younger people and they're put in charge, and they have to figure that out, because now they've got this position of, they think, seemingly, you know, some more power, if you will. But at the same time, they've got to figure out how do we lead in a way that really have others, you know, embracing what we're doing, so that they attack their particular roles with a level of passion and enthusiasm, and where you eventually get people to see that them doing an excellent job is part of their currency with everyone else they work with. You know, oftentimes, you know, I'll bring up, there's a few places where I've worked and you know, I would say in the doctoral program at Northeastern, where your currency with everyone else was your ability to just always bring your A game, always do what you say you're going to do, communicate with people openly. If there's something you can't do, if life has thrown you a curveball and all of a sudden, oof, I'm not going to be able to make it, the first call you were making was to your team members saying, hey, I'm in a little trouble as far as making this deadline. And everyone helps rally around because you had that level of trust and understanding of that. No one was trying to hide things. No one was trying to feel that they're going to look bad if they don't, you know, what we knew is you're going to look worse if you're not all over just letting the team know how they can help you. So I think there's a lot, you know, I kind of applaud, you know, I mentioned the Vistage program. I think I'm sure there are others out there that are really recognizing that there are some real core competencies that are going to take people, you know, from being really good specialists and really good role players to those who have the ability to really lead others and inspire others, you know, and do so in a way that I think in the Leadership Challenge, Jim Kouzis and Barry Posner wrote that it isn't so much lighting a fire under someone, but it's lighting the fire within. Mm-hmm. And, if we can really start getting good at the lighting the fire within part, I think that's where we recognize that that's where some real long-term, you know, value comes from.
If a CEO, if anybody in our audience, say a CEO, a senior leader, and they're dealing with, they're leading emerging leaders, that core competency stuff versus the culture stuff. If you had to begin somewhere to try to make an improvement in your organization, where would you focus?
First of all, I think you got to understand your culture. You know, I think you've got to look at it and ask yourself as a leader, are there some things that could be better about that culture? For example, I may have mentioned a while back, there was a student I had at Seton Hall a number of years ago. She'd worked at this company for about 20 years, and she talked about what incredibly collaborative environment it was, but that there were often so many meetings and so many people at all these meetings all the time that it took them like 6 to 9 months to do something that should have taken like 6 to 9 weeks. She said it was just unbelievable, you know? And when I asked her to dig into that, because we were doing a strategic communication plan for her organization, you know, she kind of came back to me with, hey, you know, everyone's just really collaborative and they respect each other and they do all this stuff. And I remember saying to her, I don't think I'm buying that. I need you to dig deeper and figure out. Of course, she got a little annoyed with me because she said, I've been at the company 20 years. Don't, you know, but to her credit, 2 days later, she calls me and she says, all right, fine. maybe I found out a little something else here. And what she found out was that the reason that everyone kind of got invited to every meeting was that culturally it was considered rude not to invite someone, that their feelings would be hurt, that they were being left out, that there was, so think about how if you attacked all of the other things that she thought were the problem, you would make no dent in it at all, because you would never have eliminated this idea culturally that this very simple little thing exists. Well, once they got people over the idea that it's okay, you can trust, you can be at this meeting and not every one of your team members also, trust that they're going to represent you well, they'll communicate what happened, you know, and we can start moving and doing things, and we start building much more of a trusting culture, not less collaborative. In fact, it's just as collaborative, but now actually you're going to actually get things done, you know, right, and make things work. And so this is where...
And it may have been like that Abilene paradox.
Yeah.
Half the people probably didn't want to be there anyway.
Right. Exactly.
And leave us out of this meeting.
That's right. Why am I here?
Yeah. Right.
So, but you know, when you think about, how getting the right answer to the wrong question can be hugely problematic. So I think in terms of leaders kind of understanding your culture and really digging deep and asking a lot of why questions about things, and not in a way that puts anyone on the defensive or anything like that, but just really trying to learn who are we, where are we, why are we, you know, where we are, and as a leader, how can I have an impact on even the smallest shifts, you know, in things. And I think that's a good example of a small shift that had to take place culturally that made a big, big difference, that actually made the collaborative environment that everyone wanted just function much
right,
more effectively. So, you know, I think that those things are huge. And I think in the end, you know, when you talk about certain competencies, I certainly don't feel I would be expert at, you know, by any stretch at naming them all. But I think a few of them come to mind, certainly, you know, like emotional intelligence would be, you know, clearly one of them. You know, I don't know if there's any even that you can think of, you know, beyond that. But as you look at, you start looking at what's the complete package, you know, for someone who right, can really be a like an incredibly great listener, for example, or someone who can really is capable of real empathy, someone who understands that when I lead people, I lead the whole person, not just the employee, you know, right, and maybe as a leader, if I actually get to learn about them and also where I can be vulnerable on certain things from time to time. So they see that I don't hold myself out there as some, you know, I'm perfect and you're not, you know, kind of thing, and have that relationship, that tends to breed, you know, a lot of trust, and I think a lot of understanding, and, you know, helps people just, you know, kind of realize that we're all just human beings doing the best we can, and we're going to help each other as best we can.
Yeah, the two things that leap to my mind is emotional intelligence, which I would sort of define as my ability to see my place here. Social intelligence, meaning I'm able to read the cues. I mean, it's you and I having the ability to, by way of webcam, to read off of one another, you know, social intelligence, that that ability to interact and read situations, which admittedly, I guess some people can have a more innate ability for it than others, but certainly can be learned, can be practiced. I mean, that's a competency that I know a lot of leaders express, especially in emerging leaders, their ability to read a situation, to know when to speak, when not to speak. I mean, all of those social cues that we have to learn those. I mean, we just have to pick up on those.
Yeah, and I think sometimes too, really knowing the impact we have on others and how others see us, not just how we see ourselves. The funny story I remember from being, so I was at William Cook Agency at the time, and I'm in my 30s and I'm president of the PR subsidiary there. And, you know, what do I know from, you know, when I think about it now, what did I know from leadership or anything back then? I was just, you're just kind of put in the role because I could grow the business and all that. That was about right. it. And I had a lot of people and, you know, working for me and everything. And it was fun. And really enjoyed it. But I remember one day we had hired this woman. She was there probably about 3 to 4 months. And I had two or three of my employees come into my office. They would never do anything like this. This was a very close-knit group. They were all good. They communicated with one another. They weren't, you know, about coming in and telling on someone else, you know. But they basically came in and said, look, this woman you hire, she's great and all this. But I will admit that whenever, you know, it's crunch time, you know, sometimes we got to pull together and get projects done and get things. And it's kind of a little all hands on deck and we help each other. That whenever we ask her to do anything for us, she's like, no, it's not my job and that's not happening, you know. And it was getting these guys really frustrated and it was creating a rift, obviously, with everybody. And my answer to this, if you can believe it, was, God, that's so strange. Every time I ask her to do something, she's all over it. She's doing fine. And they look at me and they look at me dumbfounded and they said, are you serious? They go, you think that you asking her to do something and us asking her to do something is the same thing? And yeah, I kind of did in a lot of ways. And or at least I wanted it to be that way. But they're looking at me like, you're out of your damn mind. You know? So I had to be like, okay, fine. So then it was really to the point where I talked to her and I said, and by the way, if any of those guys ask you to do something, pretend I'm asking you to do it. And just like, you know, this is kind of how we roll here a little bit. And you know, that's kind of the way that goes. And it ended up working out fine. But the point was, I had such a lack of understanding of, I was just kind of one of the gang. And I was just, I had a role as just one of the group, not seen in that way. And I had to kind of recognize that, not only in situations like that, but when I did anything, how I acted directly, indirectly, whatever, everybody's watching all the time. And so understanding that and having that sense, that's a big growth moment. It was for me, at least, anyway, because, you know, I just was thinking that, okay.
Well, and to the point of your first book and even the latest book, which we'll just take a brief hawking moment here. What anyone can do, how surrounding yourself with the right people will drive change, opportunity, and personal growth. Pick it up, Amazon, anywhere books are sold. But it's completely right and congruent that, you know, the people in our lives have a big impact. I'm thinking and I'm wondering about, we clearly, at least I don't have enough brain power to address certainly even a fraction of the woes that I know leaders are having in finding good talent, top talent. But let's talk a minute or two about retention, because as I encounter young professionals, it's a different era. I'm personally very fond of it. Neither of us are part of that gang that is ganging up on the millennials or whatever the next generation is called. You and I both are very bullish on these people and what they bring to the table. Yeah, so do I. And so that's not who we are as a couple of older fellows. But retention is a serious thing when there are many professionals. And a year and a half into the job, they've been there a while. And they're feeling like they've been there a while.
Yeah.
And I don't get the sense from the ones that I work with, it's not necessarily, yeah, this sucks, things are bad, so I'm looking for something. They're just looking to be jazzed in a new way. They're scratching their itches, man. You know, they're just.
Yeah, I do hear a lot, though. I think my daughters have both spoken to this with me, you know, privately, and I hear from students and at all as well, is they do want to feel a sense of purpose in their work. And it isn't always about the money. It isn't always about the hours, but I think it's about purpose and I think it's about trust. I think if today's millennial feels they're trusted in the workplace and they're given an opportunity to think and grow in their job, and they believe that what they're doing is making some kind of difference in the world and that their role they have within the company is making a difference in the company's ability to deliver on that difference, that makes a organization a lot stickier, even for what you're describing with millennials who may be far more inclined to be switching jobs back and forth. Actually, I kind of felt like, it was our parents really generation who was at the company 20, 30, 40 years. You know, our generation was happy to move, and usually it wasn't, had nothing to do with purpose. It had to do with like, if they're going to pay me another $5,000, boom, I'm gone. Yeah. You know, I'll go, yeah. And you just try different things. And
that's right.
And I think there's some advantages to doing that. I think about all of the different places that I worked, and they've all contributed to the perspective I have on a lot of things today. And if I had only been at one organization or two organizations my whole life, I think that would have been far more limited. But, you know, who knows? I mean, organizations evolve and change and they do their thing. And
So what are some things that senior leaders, in your opinion, could do to better improve and enhance that sense of purpose that they can give to their troops, including the emerging leaders?
I think it's the same thing. I do those workshops, of course, for the CEOs, for the CEO groups. And when I talk about the leaders of those groups and we talk about the factors that are important, having all the right people, right? That safe and trusting environment, that ability to productive and have valuable interaction, that there's a culture of accountability among the folks, and that the leader has to serve as the steward of those other four factors, right? And I think it's the leader's job, and very similar to what you're talking about, whether it's purpose, whether it's trust, whether it's culture of accountability, whether it's productivity or whatever, to always hold those things out there, to never be in a situation where you are letting time go by, where you take things for granted and you're just thinking, we got that. This is who we are. Well, it's who you are now, but it may not be who you are 6 months from now if you are not constantly paying attention to these things that you hold dear and that are important. One of the things I did love, actually, that they did at Hill & Knowlton. In fact, it's kind of funny because if I were to look at, core values, okay? So at Hill & Knowlton and Mullen, and of course it's Mullen Low today. If you ask someone at Mullen Low, could you recite the core values, right? They'd say no, but they lived them constantly. I mean, it was kind of remarkable in terms of there was something and they kept it present in their actions and their work and all of that. And I think that's kind of, in many respects, kind of the exception, not the rule, in terms of what they were able to accomplish with that. But at Hill & Knowlton, I think, kind of much broader, multinational corporation they had at the time, over 80 offices around the world. And their core values were basically to be accountable, bold, collaborative, and diverse. Okay. So I will never forget them. Not only is there ABCD, which makes right. it simple, but at the end of every staff meeting we had, and they were always weekly staff meetings, you don't know who was going to be asked or how that was going to go, but someone will say, tell me how you were accountable this past week. Tell me what you did that was bold. Talk about a collaborative effort that you engaged in that, and also talk about where diversity made a difference in how you may have approached a certain issue or whatever. And it was really good. And it constantly got you thinking about those values and really making them part of not just something
gave life to them.
But something how I worked, they would trigger things for me that, when in doubt, when you could be bold, do it, and take that risk and take that chance thoughtfully, of course, like anything, but, right. But it was, it was good stuff. And I thought they did a good job of that. So I think for leaders who, never allow people to just let those things kind of fall into the background and not, they need to be a constant, I think they need to be part of the conversation. They need part of a company's vocabulary. And I think leaders who are able to do that really well and able to also do things that are really congruent, right? So don't talk about how critical teams are, but yet all of your compensation, all your reward programs, everything are all geared to the individual, right? I mean, right. Things like that. So make sure that every thing you got going on in your organization is a reinforcing element to who you say you are and what you want to be. You know, millennials are no different than anyone else, and they hate hypocrisy. You know, they don't love when a company says one thing and does something else. It makes me not want to work for them anymore.
Right.
So, you know, I think simple things like that are helpful.
As we wind down, and you and I have talked off camera about this before, but and it probably is worthy of a show all of its own. But when you challenge a leader, what does a star performer in your company look like? What would a star emerging leader look like as it pertains to this conversation of values? It would seem to me that, and it makes complete practical sense to me, that the values of the company, the values of the leader, which obviously drive the culture, that the more that you can get that fit right in your hiring practices to get people that share those values, where it's not having to be forced and they're not having to be someone different than they are, that that would give those people better chances to rise and be the superstars in your organization.
Yeah. And, you know, and not everyone is going to be a leader in the organization necessarily, but everyone can lead from where they are. You know, it doesn't mean that they all rise vertically. There's only one CEO job. There's only, you know, I mean, there's so much of that going around, but they can play obviously critical roles. But you know, you're right from a standpoint of, and it kind of goes back to the workshop a little bit where when we talk about what's valuable to groups and using group dynamics to inform what makes for really great teams. And when we say to leaders, what would happen if you asked your employees, what do you think is the difference between the person who makes it in this company and someone who doesn't? And we've chatted about this before, this idea that, hey, I've got someone, great resume, interviews great, 3 to 6 months later, we're wondering what the hell's happening and why is this not working very well? And most of the time, the employees will tell you, and without getting personal about it and picking individuals or whatever, they will say that unless you are this, this, and this, or if you are that, you're never going to make it here. It's never going to happen. I don't care how talented you are, how good you are. It doesn't matter. That person's not going to make it here. Now, they'll likely go somewhere else and be perfectly well successful. But here, not going to work so well. And, you know, and I think that's the same from the time the person comes in the door to the time you're thinking about what does it take to be a leader in this organization? What does that start to look like as far as the competencies and the skills and the sensibilities and things you have to have? How do you screen for those? How do you educate for those? How do you provide an example in the workplace that is constantly reinforcing so people see that and they will model behaviors that are taking place around them? You know, I think it's huge.
Well, I'll let you have the last word, but again, I'll hawk the book and I'll hawk the workshops. You can go to Leo Battari. That's LeoBottari.com. New design, by the way. I'll give shout out to you for it's terrific. It's terrifically mobile friendly, be what I would say. And I think many of you, if not most of you, are probably consuming the content through a podcast catcher or through YouTube or going to the website. LeoBottari.com is the website. You can contact Leo for any speaking engagement, any workshops. His workshops are pretty diverse. In fact, you might just mention some stuff about your workshops, Leo, to give some people some sense of what that may look like and what you could do for them.
Well, sure. But I'd like them actually, you know, to go to the newly redesigned website that you said, because I it was definitely time. And if you go to the speaking tab there, you'll see there are 5 workshops. Well, actually 2 keynotes and 3 workshops. Some that speak to groups and some to speak to teams, and would invite you to, if you're looking to actually have a higher performing group or a higher performing team, using group dynamics to inform how to make that possible is really what these workshops are all about, what the subject matter is all about. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. And I would also just suggest that for people out there, all those emerging leaders out there, all those people that are going to be, you know, the next generation, you know, leader in their organization, to just understand that, you know, leadership is really something to be learned, and it's something to be studied, and something to, you know, so whether you look at, you know, the Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner, you know, book, The Leadership Challenge, for example, which I think is an extraordinary place for anyone to start. And quite frankly, you could start and finish right there, you know, because I think about anything you would ever need to know about what it takes to be a good leader and how to work at getting better at it can be found there. But there are also just many other, I think, really solid pieces of leadership work out there that, or, and it doesn't, you know, do what you've got time to do. Think about the number of articles and blog posts and pieces out there, and, you know, countless business and other organizational publications that are available to people today that speak to what it takes, you know, to be a good leader and how we learn those things. It is a learned thing. It isn't like, you can have a lot of talent and that's all well and good, but you're never going to be a great leader until you really understand what that looks like and how to go about doing it. And I think read some good material on it, surround yourself with people who are also taking an interest in that, so you can discuss it with them. You can embed that learning and also give one another the courage to act on that learning. And I think, you know, if we just continue to, I think, come at it with that mindset, we're going to be great. So anyway, with that, another fun conversation. Thank you very much, Randy.
And thank you.
We will get together with everyone next week. I know we have a few more of our podcasts coming up, and then I know Jeffrey Hazlett's going to be joining us, who just recent author of the Hero Factor, and right. Very excited to look at that book. And then next week too, I want to spend some time, maybe remind me, talking about, there's some other couple of great books out there from Brian Solis and Dr. Diane Hamilton that
right.
I would love to talk about, because I think both are must reads for 2019. So anyway, with that, have an awesome day.
You too. Thank you.
You bet.
To learn more about our show and what we do, to submit questions to us, and to subscribe to What Anyone Can Do podcast, please visit our website, whatanyonecando.com. What Anyone Can Do podcast is hosted by Leo Batari and me, Randy Cantrell. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod is Vibe Ace. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks for watching or listening. We hope you'll share the podcast.